You know what? Hold on. I'm going to let Wally up before we really get going because he's going to annoy the shit out of me and he will like over time.
Wally, I don't even like you right now, buddy. I don't even like you right now.
So you want to hit this off? Let's hit this off. Inaugural video.
Our first inaugural video cast, data-centric podcast with a very pretty Matt Kimball.
Oh, and a dapper Steve McDowell, Stevie Ray McDowell.
Steve McDowell right here in beautiful Chapel Hill, North Carolina. It's raining. You could hear the rain pattern on my metal roof.
We had the snow. Hey, so I was on the phone with you last week, and someone said, who are you on with? I said, Stevie Ray. And they said, didn't Stevie Ray die a long time ago?
Oh, he did.
I said, Stevie Ray will never die.
Huh? We did a podcast without you last week, Matt. We had the CEO of Scale Computing, Jeff Reddy, on.
I know. I was parenting my student, my Michigan State student / son.
Did you listen to the podcast?
I didn't yet.
No. No.
Like most of our podcasts, I found more important things to do. So I'm
I don't listen either. When I edit them together, I just kind of fast forward to where I know the breaks are.
I probably listen to 3/4 of them.
Mm.
And I actually am pleasantly surprised in about 1/4 of those 3/4 that I listen to. So,
well, let's talk. What are we talking? Let's talk about data center.
Let's talk. I want to go over some news. Can we do that?
Hey, dude. So I hope you're going to talk. The server world was rocked this week, right? You're going to tell us how?
You want to talk about the licensing stuff?
What are we talking about? VMware wants to maintain its revenue in a market where cores are increasing and what do they call the slots?
You really consider that a...
What do they call the slots where you put the CPU? Sockets.
Slockets. You really consider that? All right. So yeah.
You know what? But it's all over Twitter.
Yeah.
It's all over Twitter.
Here's the thing. And I had this conversation with somebody in the press earlier this week. So about 5 years ago, VMware tried to move to a consumption-based licensing model.
Right.
They did it. It was a very confusing model based on physical memory, virtual memory used, VCPUs used, right? And it was very, very kind of weird. But it was consumption-based computing, and it was before cloud really. In the consumption-based model of cloud, really kind of was like cloud was around then, but it wasn't like boom, like so mainstream, and everybody's used to buying that way. And so they did this, and all of their customers were like, "That's no, you're killing us. We're just going to go to Hyper-V or go to RHEL RHEL or KVM or some open source distribution." Right. So within a couple of quarters, they switched back to their socket-based licensing. So fast forward 5 years, Microsoft is almost across the board doing core-based licensing. Oracle has been there for a while. Every company on God's green earth is utilizing the cloud and has become used to this as a service model for buying. So the way I look at it is VMware wants to get back to that consumption-based licensing. And this is a transition into that kind of ultimate end state for them and their products.
Does Microsoft license Windows Server based on core count?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, they have multiple versions, right? There's standard data center, all that stuff. And depending on the version you buy, it's core based.
Well, and I think the piece of news the specific that's dropping out of this when people talk about the detail is this doesn't kick in until you hit some absurd number of cores, right? It's 32.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So it's not even core-based licensing. It's still socket-based licensing, but if you have more than 32 cores in a socket, you have to buy a second license, right?
Right.
And the average server sitting in a rack in a data center has somewhere south of 20 cores in it.
Right.
So
this won't impact most people today. And is Intel selling a product with more than 32 cores?
Yeah, but it's their super high end, you know, it's the 228 core parts that have been put together for like HPC kind of applications, right?
Okay.
And there if you read the Twitterverse and, you know, some of the stuff that's out there, there was one article in particular from a pretty big press outlet that talked about how this is directly aimed at AMD and it's going to impact mm-hmm. them negatively because, you know, they have the right. 48 and 64 derivatives of Rome. And it's like, that's just silly, right? Number one, Intel, you know, take the tinfoil hat off. Intel did not, you know, shuffle MDF funds into VMware so that they would do this. That's silly. And because they're going to be above 32 cores here later in the year as well at their high end. Number two, those 48 and 64 core parts from AMD, it's not like those are mainstream parts, right? Those are being used for HPC applications for very high end. They're very expensive and they're standing up very customized and in homegrown applications that perform very different functions. Your standard virtualization server is not a 64 core per socket server.
Right.
So I think the impact to AMD is minimal on this. The impact to Intel will be minimal on this as well. Those companies that are using really high core counts to support their applications tend to be homegrown applications built on open source that don't adhere to some core-based licensing structure to start with.
Right. So, and they're running KVM.
Yeah. They are, right? So
the real news is VMware said we have virtual sockets each with 32 cores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So
next.
That's my two cents. Did you look at them?
Holy cow. So yeah, Intel showed growth. They beat analyst estimates by $800 million.
I know.
A $20 billion quarter. The data center group in particular, they were up 20% almost. They delivered $7.2 billion on the quarter, which was three times what analysts expected. So what's going on with the analysts, Matt? How come we can't get this right?
I am not going to speak to what's going on with the analysts. I would be afraid to say that.
I will say that you and I talked about this before Intel earnings came out, and we nailed the number like pretty close.
Oh yeah, I think we're off by like $500,000 or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But that's how we roll.
Right.
No, seriously, I can't speak to what's going on with the analysts. What I can tell you is this: when you look at their numbers, you know their growth was in cloud and in the telco space, right? I think it's like 41% growth in cloud, and then what's the 20%, maybe a little bit more than that. No, I think it's about 49% in cloud, and it's about 15% in comms, right? So,
and is it the 5G retrofit that's driving the telco part?
I think it's the 5G deployment. I think it's 5G deployment that's driving the.
You know, we should get on one of these podcasts, Will Townsend, who's our telecom analyst at More Insights, to talk to us about 5G and what's going on there.
We should do that. That'd be good.
Yeah.
On the cloud side, you know, it's interesting because if I went back and I looked at their number over the last few quarters, and if you map their cloud growth over time, it's pretty incredible. They've had some very, very strong numbers. So this growth is not so far out of line from quarters past. I think it's just stunning in the wake of, you know, the last couple quarters where they saw a decline in deployments. So I have to think it's end of year refreshment or end of year purchase cycles. It's cloud guys starting to sample their new parts, right? Their 10 nanometer parts. I think that's where you're seeing probably most of the growth. And what's interesting is if you look at their numbers and kind of put it all together, their ASP actually is not as strong as it has been in quarters past. So that tells me they're probably running into some pricing competition from AMD.
Right.
Which would make sense. But yeah, it's incredible. And AMD had a decent quarter too. You know, people look at the numbers of AMD and they don't see this hockey stick growth. And what they forget is when you look at their they call it EESC, Enterprise Embedded and Semi-Custom Group.
Right.
The server sales, that number is being dragged down by semi-custom pretty heavily, right? Because semi-custom is their gaming consoles, kind of stuff they do for, you know, kind of in that space in adjacent markets. So if you look at the number in total and you look at the contributing revenue, operating income that they've the way that's increased year over year, it tells me their server numbers starting to take off, even in the era of, you know, kind of soft semi-custom sales.
Right. So they guided down overall, right? Which is why okay.
Yeah, they guided down. Intel, I think, for the year guided high single digits, whereas AMD was flat to a little bit down on their guided. Mm-hmm.
Well, the interesting quote out of Intel, I think, was that they used the word insatiable when they talked about data center demand currently and moving in through 2020.
Yeah.
So that'll speak well to AMD server business, but the bulk of AMD's business, right, and what's driving the stock price is more consumer and gaming focused.
It is. Well, it's consumer. It's consumer client, right?
Right. Right. Well, yeah. Right, client, not consumer. Yeah.
It is. But you know, you have to remember the margins and the actual profit they make usually comes from the data center side. Those client pieces tend to not be as high margin parts as the server stuff.
Okay.
So here's another interesting piece of news, and I don't mean to make this all semiconductor, but it came out last week. But you and I haven't spoken in a little bit. But so, you know, Cisco goes and names Lisa Su, Dr. Lisa Su, from CEO of AMD to its board of directors.
Yeah, what's up with that?
So interesting, right? Interesting to me, I should say. Here's the thing, right? Cisco is in a weird place right now. They are the networking giant in the world, right? They're the 800-pound gorilla that's sitting in the room whenever you talk about networking. But you've got SD-WAN, you've got open networking platforms that are starting to be adopted at companies large and small, right? The point is, it's a changing world for Cisco. Right. And it's what I find interesting about that is I look at a company like them and I think they're in a very good position, but they're going to need help kind of transforming a little bit and kind of figuring out where they fit in this brave new world, how they position themselves, and what they look like 10 years from now or 5 years from now. Mm-hmm. And that's going to take some work. And I think that's where Lisa Su can be really interesting for them because, I mean, look, you were at AMD when Lisa first came on, right? I mean, that was a company that was headed for bankruptcy court. And she did an amazing job of kind of changing the culture at that company, changing its strategic outlook or direction, and then executing against that strategy. And Cisco is certainly not where AMD was, not even close. They're in a strong position, but I think she can help Cisco as they go through that transformation. And I think it helps AMD too, right? I mean, look, they have one server platform at Cisco right now. I don't know that their embedded parts are in any of the networking gear. I'm not really sure, but I have to think there's a big benefit to AMD on it as well.
I think there is opportunity. And how you describe Cisco, I think, has been true for a decade, right?
Yeah,
we always look at Cisco and they have a fairly steady run rate, but not a lot of growth in the markets that they serve relative to, you know, the other tier one OEMs.
Yeah,
in that space.
You know, it's interesting with them. You're right. They've been at the server game for about 10 years. Well, no, not quite 10 years, but about close to 10 years now. And they've kind of peaked at about that 6% market share, 7 or 8% market share range. There is opportunity for more growth there. And given their portfolio, you would think that, you know, they could reach further into the data center, right? I mean, their network.
You would think. So they've tried and tried. Well, let me ask you this. You're the server guy. Are Cisco servers being positioned head-to-head against Dell and HPE servers in the data center? Or are they selling more into workload-specific where there's other Cisco gear? And is this year going to be a big year for them as we, you know, start rolling out 5G?
They're being sold into Cisco shops. Not necessarily just for specific workloads, right?
Okay. But every enterprise IT shop is a Cisco shop. Unless you're a Huawei shop.
But there's a religion associated with it, right? And if you are of the Cisco religion and you buy into their strategy of the convergence of compute and networking and everything else, and you believe they're the company to deliver on that, then you're going to go look at UCS in a serious way.
Okay.
Standing up, you know, ProLiant or PowerEdge against UCS, it's apples and oranges, right? It really is.
Right.
And that's where Cisco is not, I don't think, has been effective at all, is that, you know, just sell me a rack of servers, you know, stop talking to me about everything else. I don't care about the plumbing. I just need to buy 20 servers. They haven't played well on that transactional side at all.
Well, right. Because in the field, they still view themselves as a plumbing company.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's also worth noting, beyond servers, they also have partnerships with NetApp and Pure, and they're selling their UCS systems into HyperFlex HCI kind of solutions.
Yeah, they have their own HCI software, right? They bought a company a few years ago. They have some great management software. They have a lot of great assets in that portfolio of products. That's why it's going to be interesting to see what kind of impact someone like Dr. Su has on them, because I think there is an opportunity for them in some ways to kind of be ahead of, you know, it's relative to its competition from a kind of infrastructure management.
Right.
And infrastructure, I mean, everything from, you know, that device up to the data that's sitting in your data center. I think they have a huge opportunity. So,
well, we'll see what Lisa can do. Dr. Su.
Dr. Su.
Dr. Su.
Well, let's just call her Lisa. I never really called her Dr. Su. It's kind of weird to say that.
Very formal.
Yes, very formal. What do you got going on, Stevie?
What do I got going on? I've been looking at cloud numbers. I think Google did their earnings, and for the first time, they broke out the cloud revenue, showing annual growth of 87%, almost 89%. They did a $10 billion run rate is what they ended up at the end of the year. And they're saying that accelerated on the back half of the year, if you read the breakouts. So where we show the cloud market, I think the cloud market is trending a little more flat than it has been in recent years, but the growth is still fairly incredible. If we look at this, so Amazon AWS grew 36% last year, right? They delivered estimates around $34 billion, right, of cloud business. Azure is at about $18 billion, but they're growing at 63%. So what we need to do is we need to draw a graph to see where these intersect, these growth rates. I mean, you expect Amazon to flatten their growth a little bit as the incumbent and as this market gets saturated.
Yep.
So I think the Amazon numbers show growth in the cloud market overall. I think the Azure and Google Cloud numbers are showing migrations maybe or choices that are being made not to go to Amazon, but to go to alternative architectures.
Yeah.
And when we talk about cloud and we talk to IT guys about cloud, they typically say Amazon's our first choice. Azure is kind of number two. And Google Cloud, we don't look at that as an enterprise play. We look at that as the scientific guys or the DevOps guys or the technical guys want to go there. But if you look at the numbers, you know, Google's tweaking things and I think moving in a better direction. So Microsoft's growing at 63, almost 64%. Google Cloud, its growth rate last year was close to 90%. It was 87.8. Those guys are on fire. Now the numbers are still, you know, completely disproportionate.
Right. Yeah.
So said Amazon's at 34 billion. Google Cloud is at 6 to 10, depending on which chart you look at.
Azure's at 18. Yeah. So, I mean, that growth rate is impressive, but yeah, they're starting from a much smaller starting point, right, than the others. You have to think though that with the change in leadership and with the investments they're making, that Google's going to figure things out. And it sounds like they're starting to figure things out. What I'm kind of curious about is what the on-prem story looks like for all three of these guys, right? Whether it's Outpost or is it Acropolis from Google or Azure Stack?
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, what the run rate looks like on these and if they've landed any kind of like big early adopters.
We need to find a quantitative analyst who's counting this on-prem thing, right? Who's counting GreenLake and all of these consumption as, or, you know, X as a service, which includes the Amazon and the Azure pushing down into on-prem.
For sure it does. And I don't know of anybody counting it right now. I don't know that, in fairness, I don't think nobody's counting it, and the cloud guys aren't breaking numbers out.
The cloud guys barely break out the cloud numbers, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think we're going to see real numbers from any of the tier ones playing in this space. I think they'll quote growth numbers.
Yeah.
Right. But nobody wants to give away what the market is right now. So we need to figure out a way to weasel into that number.
And that whole on-prem stuff I found interesting, though, was, you know, you had, so Amazon goes out with Outpost, right? And it's an Amazon stack that sits in your data center. And it's Amazon designed platform.
Right.
Microsoft goes out with partners, right? So you can buy Azure Stack on Lenovo or HPE. The Acropolis goes out on HPE. It's interesting that, you know, of the big OEMs, that, you know, AWS, or, you know, AWS, of the big cloud guys, AWS is the only one to go at it alone. And I wonder if that helps them or hurts them.
I don't know. We'll see. There were some numbers out this week. I don't have them in front of me for the podcast that talked about repatriation rates where people are bringing stuff back home.
Yeah.
And we talk about this over and over, right? Yeah. Where the on-prem as a service is really a stopgap to mitigate some of that migration away.
Yeah. Well, I think when you start to see a real hybrid cloud getting deployed in the data center, you know, that answers a lot of that resolves a lot of the issues that is leading to repatriation, right?
Right.
Because part of the challenge is you don't have a good on-ramp and off-ramp to cloud or clouds, right? A multi-cloud environment. And by definition, hybrid environment should provide that seamless on-ramp, off-ramp, and movement of data around. But it really doesn't, you haven't seen a really good solution yet. I think Dell may be there with their VMware Cloud on VxRail or on PowerOne or some of their platforms.
But it's a strong offering, right? And we got we'll see more about that the first week of April. No, first week of May at Dell Tech World.
So you gonna keep doing these video podcasts?
Let's see how this one looks. So we'll keep well. Good.
Yeah, we
do. Have anything else to talk about?
No, what do you got going on next week? You got any travel or anything coming up?
I don't have travel. I don't have travel again. There's a maybe trip at the end of February for a vendor thing that we're still waiting to see about some of the logistics. Yeah. But I don't pick up in earnest until March.
Yeah.
But toward the end of March, it starts a steady run. I'm going to NVIDIA GTC out in San Jose.
Yeah.
The same week, there's an Intel Investor Analyst Day in New York. Then we have Red Hat Summit, and then IBM Think and Dell Technology World, all in a space of about a month.
Yeah.
So we'll be on the road. I know I'll see you at some of those.
Yeah. And then on the heels of that, you'll have a few more. For me, though, on my side, one is there's not a lot going on right now. You know, the Intel is kind of a little bit off from their refresh. AMD Rome went out. Milan's a little bit ways out. So there's not a lot of refresh going on the platform side.
Yeah.
Right. So there's not necessarily as much for them to talk about.
Same. Yeah. Same for storage. There's not a lot going on with anybody in storage right now.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a busy year. Things are going to ramp.
Yeah.
So. All right. I'm done.
Whatever.